A lot of attention is showered on health concerns such as heart disease and cancer. But there is much less attention and effort being directed to something that's the cause of more than half of all hospital deaths, sepsis. Dr. Jack Awashna is an associate professor in the Pulmonary and Critical Care Division of the Department of Internal Medicine at the University of Michigan. He's also a research scientist at the Ann Arbor VA Healthcare System. Welcome, Dr. Awashna.
Thank you so much for having me.
And Marianne Udall-Phillips is here. She directs the Center for Healthcare Research and Transformation. Good to have you back on the program, Marianne.
Great to be here, Cindy.
Well, doctor, you've treated a lot of sepsis patients in intensive care units, and you've co-authored a piece about sepsis that made it to the Journal of the American Medical Association. Why do we need to pay more attention to sepsis?
So we like to imagine that we live in a world where infectious diseases are a solved problem. Those are problems for folks in Africa, not in the United States. The reality is that infection is still a problem in the United States. And indeed, as we get better at solving or treating patients who have heart disease or treating patients who have cancer, they live on, but often a little more susceptible to infection. Sepsis, as we were talking about, is just bad infection. Sepsis is what happens when the body's response to infection causes collateral damage and goes on to damage itself. And so as we get better at treating other things, we get more and more infection, ironically. As we get more and more infection, we get more and more sepsis.
And we do have that sense that I think many of us who are baby boomers grew up with in the 50s, 60s, and 70s. You have a problem? There's an antibiotic for that. And we have, I think, a false sense of security, don't we, about these kinds of problems?
If you're a 25-year-old guy who gets a small infection, yeah, antibiotics on the whole do really great because, honestly, your body's really strong. But our bodies weren't designed to be able to make it till 75, 85 and have to fight those same infections that they might fight at 25. And as we get more and more folks able to live on with diseases that in the past would have killed them, there's a lot of infection there that antibiotics by themselves don't treat. In the end, the body cures the infection. The antibiotics just help.
Give us a typical case so we can understand what sepsis is and what it can do.
I think of the classic cases of somebody who's doing well, my grandmother when she was in her 60s, who's doing fine and then develops a pneumonia. That pneumonia for her caused a lot of complications. So even somebody who's doing well, when they develop a pneumonia, that progresses into sepsis and it progresses into organ dysfunctions. For her, the antibiotics were able to fight her through it and she was able to come out of the hospital, but she was never quite right afterwards. And that's sort of what sepsis is. It's people who are doing well in the outpatient setting, doing well at home, then they get a pneumonia, they get a urinary tract infection.
And this whole cascade of events begins. Marianne, what does this mean in terms of hospitalizations and increased healthcare costs?
Well, you know, it's such an important issue because I think people don't understand that half of all hospital deaths now are caused by sepsis. It's huge. It's the number one discharge diagnosis, a number two discharge diagnosis after normal delivery in Michigan, and the costs are enormous. So we are spending a tremendous amount. It's causing a lot of personal harm. It's causing family harm, and it's something we don't talk about. We don't focus on sepsis as a significant issue.
Well, I think the public doesn't. Well, right now, the whole nation is worrying about Ebola. And as you said, Jack, this is something that is just, you know, that is not a threat. Sepsis definitely is. And why don't we talk about it? Why haven't we heard about sepsis?
It's always hard to play the my disease is more important than your disease game. And that's always tempting. I think we, frankly, haven't made as much progress on it. We like to tell stories of victory. And over the last few years, we've been able to tell tremendous stories of victory for heart disease. Over the last years, we've told tremendous stories of victory over cancer. We haven't made that same progress in sepsis. And as a result, we have neither the scientific story where we can say, hey, we fixed this in mice, nor the human story where we've been able to show the progress that we could make if we spent the attention on it.
When you think of the fact that more people are dying from sepsis than die from prostate cancer, breast cancer, and AIDS combined, yeah. All of things, as you say, we've made great strides battling against, what needs to happen for us to be able to make sepsis a success story?
Right. We clearly need to work together. We need health systems to work together. We need the Department of Community Health to be working with the health systems. You know, in Michigan, we have a great story about what happened in our state on trauma care. The Department of Community Health really led hospitals across the state to come together to build a trauma system where they were sharing best practices, where they were sharing information. We need to do the same kind of thing with sepsis. We need to be funding innovative models. We need to be sharing best practices. We need to be sharing tools and techniques across our state on both the issue of diagnosis, because clearly the earlier we diagnose people with sepsis, the better the outcome is, and then also the supportive therapies and treatment that are needed, because as Jack said, it's not just an issue of surviving sepsis. You can survive it, but then you can have some really long-term issues. So we need both that better diagnosis and that better support afterwards.
And what does that look like from the hospital perspective, Jack?
So I couldn't agree more with Marianne. And just to put some numbers to that, So after heart attacks, we know that most patients will get between 96% or 98% of patients will get the appropriate medicines. When you look at the systems that have done so well in improving their sepsis care that they can report it, a system in Utah has got all the way up from 4% of patients getting appropriate therapy up to 75%. So on the one hand, 4% to 75%, that's tremendous improvement. On the other hand, I don't really want to live in a world where you can brag about missing one in four of the cases.
Yeah, 25% are being missed.
Yeah.
And we used to be that bad at heart attacks. We used to be that bad at trauma. And instead, what we did is we focused as both doctors, as clinicians, as systems, and as a state on saying, this is something we're not going to miss anymore. This is something we're going to develop systems so that if you come in with a possibility of having a heart attack, we quickly evaluate that and we quickly activate protocols. Because in the United States, heart attacks are something we take very seriously. What I wonder about and what Marianne's talking about is, can we build that same sort of systems for sepsis? Can we say, we don't yet know what perfection looks like, but we know we've got a long way till we're there. And we can develop systems that start asking, are you septic early? If you are, giving you appropriate antibiotics and monitoring you closely. The technology here is pretty straightforward. It's antibiotics and it's saline. It's rehydrating people and giving them some stuff through the IV. This doesn't require a ton of capital. It doesn't require big cardiac cath labs, but it does require systems where everyone's looking and focused on sepsis.
It strikes me that some of that or a large part of that needs to happen on the education level as doctors are being trained, no?
Absolutely. And this is something that we're slowly getting there. Doctors like to do cool things just as much as everybody else do. Doctors like to go with a heart disease and cancer where there's been all this attention and sense of progress. We're finally getting that for sepsis, and people are coming to recognize this as a problem that could show up everywhere.
And, you know, you asked earlier, how come we don't pay as much attention to sepsis? How come we don't know that half of hospital deaths are due to sepsis? You know, we've built a great advocacy system around cancer, around heart disease. You know, there are walks. There's, you know, everybody's out there with the pink ribbons for breast cancer, for AIDS. There isn't that kind of natural advocacy group out there for people with sepsis because it's actually quite diverse, right? We have patients coming in with all sorts of different presenting initial problems. So urinary tract infection, lung problems, et cetera, that can lead to sepsis. So there's not that sort of natural grouping that's been put together.
A good rallying point.
Exactly, exactly. And I think that's part of what we need people to understand. This is a common, unfortunately very common, problem for people in the hospital. And we need to really get people to work together from the training to the funding to the protocols that really can help cure this issue.
We're talking with Marianne Udall-Phillips of the Center for Healthcare Research and Transformation and Dr. Jack Iwashnow, who's with the Department of Internal Medicine at the University of Michigan, where he works in the Pulmonary and Critical Care Division, as we look at sepsis, which is the cause of more than half of all hospital deaths. What about public civilian responsibility? What should the public know? We all got warning signs of cancer and breast self-examination and get your mammogram and awareness of symptoms and signs. So what needs to happen towards the public?
You can only do good breast cancer awareness. You can only benefit from breast self-exams once you have a system in place that's ready to take those patients. And after you find a lump, work it up and treat it appropriately. The fact of the matter is we don't have that infrastructure in place on the healthcare side yet to have a strong patient voice saying, hey, I think I've got sepsis. Mm-hmm. What we need to do right now is advocate for the healthcare system to get its house in order, that as payers, providers, and the state work together to make sure we can respond appropriately to sepsis, then we can think about how to bring in patients with increased education and advocacy.
But this is something that patients need to be aware of, and people generally need to be aware of, because public policy in the end is going to be responsive to what people in our state and in other states want. And public health funding is also going to follow what we feel are the most significant issues to address. And so for consumers who've been touched by sepsis, and there are many people who've been touched in their families by sepsis one way or the other, they need to be able to share with policymakers what the criticality of is of this issue. And people need to be aware that this is a real problem. They need to be encouraging the health system and policymakers to make a change. And they've done that in other states. So in New York, for example, there was a very well-known and a very tragic death from a young man from sepsis. And that spurred the state to take on legislative fixes. They asked for hospitals to have protocols in place. They have to report to the state what they're doing to identify sepsis. And that was something that citizens were asking for changes in the state as a result of that particular death. We know there's interest in the legislature here in Michigan in doing something similar. They need to hear from people that this is an important issue, that we do need to address it as a state.
So what's the takeaway here, Jack? I know you've got this piece in the Journal of the American Medical Association speaking to the physicians of Michigan and of the country. But what do you say to people listening who perhaps it did touch their lives? They're delighted and grateful that grandma survived, and we want to move on. Like, we don't want to revisit it.
You know, I think for many of us, we can find some meaning in finding ways to look back at the things we've survived and build past them to make sure other people don't have to go through that same space. I think what people can do is exactly what Marianne said, that Michigan could take pride in being a leader on sepsis, could take pride in being a leader in thinking about how we built an infrastructure that made sure people didn't need to die from this. And so I think what people can do is say, my mom survived, I survived this, others shouldn't have to. And in the same way that people have been a tremendous force for making sure other people don't have to go through cancer, they could be that same powerful force for responding to sepsis.
Meantime, is there a sense of warning signs that the public can keep in their minds that you could share with us, the same as we have for the 7 warning signs of cancer? So you could get proactive with a physician who might not be responding the way you think they should if you're in the emergency room or you're in the hospital.
Absolutely. Sepsis starts as infection. The key question is this an infection that's going to get better on itself, the kind of ear infections, the sort of upper respiratory tract viral infections that go away, mm-hmm. for which you don't need antibiotics. And for those, don't get antibiotics. But if it's a bad infection, if it's an infection that you're beginning to develop confusion from, trouble breathing from, a low blood pressure, those need to be treated and treated now. But what people need to do is try to help their doctors think through the, is this a benign infection for which antibiotics are really just going to cause problems? Or is this a bad infection where I'm developing other organ problems? And if it is, then those need treatment and they need monitoring now.
And this is where it's a common story where you tell consumers, maybe you need to go see another doctor. Don't just accept what's being told to you if it doesn't feel right.
That's absolutely right. And people have to be monitoring the seriousness of their symptoms and their family members' symptoms because, you know, people might not want to acknowledge how badly that they're doing. It's a balance because we know that we overprescribe antibiotics. And so we don't want to rush to get more antibiotics for everything. But in these cases, antibiotics are truly life-saving. You've got to be able to say, you know, Jack just gave you those indications of when it really is serious, mental confusion, high fevers, problems breathing, really serious symptoms, not like the common cold where you just sort of feel lousy, right? So it's part of educating the consumers as to what the difference is from feeling bad and wanting to feel better from feeling really, really sick in a serious way.
And I can only imagine the healthcare dollars that sepsis gobbles up.
Oh, absolutely. It's extremely expensive to treat sepsis. It is our number one cost in the state. The average charge for sepsis is $42,000 per case in Michigan, and we spend billions on it nationally.
Have you gotten reaction from your piece in JAMA?
Absolutely. So there have been a series of wonderful conversations, people asking, what do we do next? How do we start making this better? There have been folks in the VA who are doing some very interesting thinking about what can we do to help detect sepsis in veterans. I'd say there are also some people who, frankly, want to argue this isn't a problem, who want to say, oh, we're just relabeling old infections and that's not such a big deal. I think they're wrong. I think the data shows pretty clearly that we used to think sepsis was a problem that was life-threatening but not life-altering. The reality is it's both life-threatening and life-altering. And this is a problem we need to face in the 21st century, even though we'd like to imagine it was solved in the 1950s.
Dr. Jack Iwashnia is an associate professor of internal medicine, and he's a member of the Institute for Healthcare Policy and Innovation at the University of Michigan. And Marianne Udall-Phillips directs the Center for Healthcare Research and Transformation. Thank you so much to both of you for coming in and speaking with us.
Oh, thank you, Cindy.
Thank you much, Cindy.